Imagine holding a prism up to the light. A single pure beam enters, and what emerges is a spectrum of colors, reds, blues, greens, all determined by the angle, the shape, and the clarity of the glass. The Stoics believed our minds worked in precisely the same way. The events of the world, the light, are neutral. They arrive without meaning, without intention, without power to wound us unless we hand them that power. What we experience depends entirely on how our minds refract them, how we choose to bend, twist, or clarify them. Marcus Aurelius once wrote, "The soul becomes dyed with the color of its thoughts." He understood that perception was everything. The color of your soul, your emotional state, your peace or torment. These things do not come from the world, but from how you see it. But this lecture is not a gentle reflection on life's unpredictability. It is not a soft meditation on chaos. It is a battle cry, a call to arms for the courageous few who dare to reclaim dominion over their own minds. A call to discipline your thinking until it stands unshaken by storms, unmoved by insults, and immune to the illusions of control. Because here is the brutal truth. The world will never, ever be calm. But you can be. That is the only thing within your power. Sometimes even to live is an act of courage. To rise each morning and step into a world riddled with uncertainty, conflict, loss, and expectation requires a courage that is all too real, yet rarely recognized. It is not the grand acts of bravery that define us. It is the quiet persistence, the ability to get up one more time, to face one more challenge, to carry on when the weight of life feels unbearable. The Stoics understood this better than anyone. They taught that the courage to endure, to persist without complaint, to continue when everything seems against you, is the very foundation upon which every other virtue is built. The chapters that follow are not just academic. They are practical blueprints, each a stepping stone toward what the Stoics called apatheia, freedom from passion, freedom from disturbance, freedom from being enslaved by things outside your control. We will not merely explore philosophy as an intellectual exercise. We will carve it into your daily existence. We will walk together through the trials, discomforts, and mental exercises that will train your mind to remain calm in any situation, no matter how turbulent. Because a strong mind, like a strong body, is not gifted at birth. It is forged through resistance, repetition, and ruthless honesty. Chapter 1. The Nature of Calm. You are the prism. The world is chaotic. People will insult you. Life will disappoint you. Events will spiral beyond your control. Circumstances will not conform to your desires, and people will rarely behave the way you wish them to. The Stoics never denied this reality. They looked it squarely in the eye and embraced it without flinching. They taught that it was not the external world, the winds, the waves, the noise, that disturbed us, but our interpretation of it. It is not the storm that unsettles the sailor, but how he perceives the storm. You are the prism. The events of the world are like light entering you, neutral, indifferent, without meaning or malice. What enters your mind may be the light of tragedy, betrayal, hardship, or even good fortune. But whether that light is split into sorrow or strength, into bitterness or growth, into rage or resolve, that choice is always yours. The Stoics taught us that the mind is the ultimate filter, the one variable in the equation of life that we can always control. Consider the great emperor Marcus Aurelius. Every morning he woke, not to peace or ease, but to a battlefield of political intrigue, betrayal, illness, and war. His empire teetered on the edge of chaos. His friends and allies plotted behind his back. His own body was ravaged by illness and fatigue. Yet in the quiet hours of dawn, before the machinery of power began grinding, he would sit and write to himself, not as an emperor, but as a student of life. In those private reflections, he reminds himself, you have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength. Think of that. A man with the weight of the world on his shoulders, surrounded by deception, disease, and death, returning always to the same conclusion, that calm and strength are not found in the absence of problems, but in the mastery of perception. This is where we begin, not by attempting to control the uncontrollable, not by bending the world to our will, but by learning to control how we see it. By stepping back from the noise and seeing not only the events themselves, but the layers of interpretation we have unconsciously wrapped around them. We must become vigilant custodians of our inner dialogue, aware of how the narrative we construct around each situation can either bind us in chains or set us free. It requires ruthless honesty to admit how often we embellish the facts with assumptions, exaggerations, and fears. A simple look, a missed call, a change in plans. These become insults, betrayals, disasters, not because they are, but because we assign them such weight. The Stoics teach us to unweave these stories, to pare life back down to its raw ingredients, and then to choose deliberately how we will season them. By becoming aware of the stories we tell ourselves about what happens, we reclaim authorship of our experience. And in doing so, we can craft a narrative not of victimhood but of agency, not of chaos but of clarity. We can shape a story that empowers rather than imprisons us, one that allows us to meet life with resilience, poise, and grace. That, the Stoics taught, is where true freedom resides, not in the absence of difficulty, but in the ability to decide what that difficulty will mean to us. Each evening, write down three events that disturbed your peace that day. Then, beside each one, write how you could have seen it differently. How would a Stoic reinterpret that event? Chapter 2. Emotional Contagion and Mental Hygiene. Emotions are contagious. You become what you dwell upon. Like a sponge dropped in muddy water, if you surround yourself with outrage, anger, or anxiety, you will absorb it without even realizing. If you let insult, envy, or bitterness linger in your mind, you make them your masters. You allow these intruders to dictate the rhythm of your heart and the clarity of your thoughts. The emotional atmosphere you breathe becomes the very air of your inner world. Epictetus warned with surgical precision, if someone tried to take control of your body, you would fight for freedom. Yet how easily you hand over your mind to anyone who insults you. These are not mere words, but a mirror reflecting the tragedy of how quickly we surrender our peace. We build fortresses to protect our possessions, but leave the gates of our minds wide open to thieves of calm. Modern science now confirms what the Stoics knew millennia ago, without the benefit of neuroscience or MRI machines. Mirror neurons in your brain light up when you observe others in distress, fear, or rage. The agitation of others ripples through your nervous system like an invisible current. Without conscious mental hygiene, you absorb these vibrations without resistance, blending your emotions with theirs until you can no longer distinguish between what is yours and what is theirs. The human mind, left unguarded, is a sponge for agitation. You may walk into a room filled with anger or panic and find yourself carrying that energy long after you've left, not because it belongs to you, but because you absorbed it unwittingly. It seeps into you quietly, without your consent, without your awareness, until suddenly you find your mood darkened, your breathing shallow, your thoughts racing with unrest. That unrest is not yours. It is borrowed, absorbed from the people and environments around you. The modern world amplifies this phenomenon. We are bombarded not only by the emotions of those physically near us, but by a constant barrage of digital noise. The news cycle thrives on this principle, feeding you outrage, conflict, and fear until it colonizes your thoughts and drives your behavior without you even noticing. Social media algorithms ensure that the most divisive, enraging, and emotionally charged content rises to the top, ensuring that every scroll, every headline, every notification drips a little more anxiety, a little more anger into your bloodstream. It becomes a slow, invisible poisoning of the soul. But this is not inevitable. You cannot stop others from being angry, anxious, or rude, but you can stop yourself from mirroring them. You can draw a clear boundary between their turmoil and your own internal landscape. You can choose to be the eye of the storm, the still point around which chaos may swirl, but which is never touched. This is not apathy. This is not coldness. This is sovereignty over your own mind. It is emotional discipline of the highest order. It is the sacred responsibility to choose, moment by moment, what emotions you allow to take root within you. It is the act of deciding, again and again, whether you will be ruled by the turbulence of others or remain steadfast in your own calm. It is the deliberate, often difficult, but always necessary practice of guarding your inner peace like a soldier guards a citadel, not casually, not occasionally, but vigilantly and fiercely, knowing that the well-being of your entire inner world depends on that vigilance. For one entire day, practice emotional fasting. Whenever someone attempts to provoke you, whether through rudeness, urgency, or negativity, imagine their words bouncing off an impenetrable shield around your mind. Observe without absorbing. Chapter 3: The Power of Present Focus. To be calm is to be present. It is to be rooted in the here and now, without being swept away by the currents of speculation or the shadows of memory. Anxiety is born in the future, a child of uncertainty and imagination, crafted from events that have not yet happened and may never happen at all. Regret, on the other hand, is a ghost that lives in the past, haunting you with what could have been, tormenting you with echoes of yesterday's mistakes, chaining you to things that are no longer within your power to change. The Stoics understood this simple yet profound truth. Peace can only exist in the present moment. It is here and now, in this very breath, that your power lies, waiting to be claimed. Seneca wrote, "True happiness is to enjoy the present without anxious dependence upon the future." He meant that happiness, serenity, and calm are never found in the imaginary projections of tomorrow or the endless replaying of yesterday's failures. They live only in this moment, pure, undistorted, and free, like a clear sky unobstructed by clouds. Every time you replay an insult, you surrender the present. You allow someone's careless words to steal your time twice, once when they were said, and again each time you relive them in your mind, each time you grant them permission to disrupt your peace. Every time you worry about what might happen tomorrow, you abandon your power and waste your energy on events that may never come to pass. You allow shadows of possible futures to cast darkness over your present reality, turning the light of now into the gloom of what if. A Stoic understands that all problems are born when the mind leaves the now. When you transport yourself mentally into a future that is not yet real, or a past that cannot be altered, you detach from the only thing you truly possess, the present moment. It is here that you can act, here that you can think clearly, here that you can find peace. To be calm, then, is not to be free from challenge, but to be anchored in the present, rooted in the soil of what is, unmoved by the winds of what was or what might be. A mind trained in this awareness becomes like a still lake, reflecting the sky without being disturbed by passing clouds. Thoughts of the future may arise, but they ripple across the surface without disturbing the depth. Memories of the past may visit, but they drift away like leaves carried by the breeze. It is a practice, a discipline, and a choice you must make again and again until it becomes second nature, a way of living fully and freely within the narrow window of now. And here lies the great secret. The more you return to the present, the stronger you become. The less you allow the mind to wander backward into sorrow or forward into anxiety, the more invincible you become in the face of life's storms. Every time you pull yourself back to this moment, you build an inner resilience that cannot be shaken by external chaos. You begin to realize that calm isn't something you seek in the world. It's something you construct within, one breath at a time. It is not about silencing the mind completely. That is impossible, for thought is the nature of the mind. But it is about learning how to redirect that thought, gently but firmly, like a rider guiding a restless horse. It's about standing watch over your awareness and becoming aware of when you have drifted away, and then bringing yourself back, again and again, with patience, with kindness, with discipline. Your life is happening here, in this breath, in this step, in this moment. Not yesterday, not tomorrow. This exact second is where your agency resides. This is the seat of all power. The present is not just a fleeting point in time. It is the axis upon which your entire existence turns. It is the only moment you truly possess, the only moment where thought meets action, where awareness meets reality. Everything else, your memories, your anticipations, are illusions painted by the mind, shadows dancing on the walls of your consciousness. The present moment is not merely a neutral space. It is the forge in which your character is shaped, the arena where your virtue is tested, the soil where the seeds of your future are planted. It is the battleground where you choose, moment by moment, to exercise wisdom over impulse, clarity over confusion, courage over fear. It is the place where you can rewrite the narrative of your life, not in grand resolutions, but in small, deliberate choices. That is where calm is born. Not in the absence of noise, but in your ability to choose where your mind rests amidst the noise. Not in the elimination of hardship, but in the unwavering awareness that you can meet it with composure, that you can decide how to respond, even when the world around you spirals in chaos. That is where strength is born, not from circumstance, but from choice. That is where freedom is found, not in external conditions, but in the disciplined stewardship of your inner world. And once you learn to live in that space, not for a moment, not as a temporary refuge, but as a habit, as a way of being, you will discover something extraordinary. You will find that the present, when fully inhabited, is not a limitation, but an expansive, infinite wellspring of possibility. You will come to realize that everything you seek, peace, joy, clarity, resilience, was never in the future or the past. It was here all along, patiently waiting for you to return. Carry a small coin in your pocket. Every time you find your mind drifting into the past or future, touch the coin. Let it serve as an anchor, pulling your awareness back to this moment, this breath. Chapter 4. Voluntary discomfort, the training ground. A calm mind is not built in comfort. It is forged in adversity, hammered into shape like iron on an anvil. The Stoics understood that true resilience cannot be cultivated in softness or luxury. It is in discomfort, in challenge, in self-imposed hardship that the muscles of the mind are strengthened. They practiced voluntary discomfort, not as masochists, but as warriors in training, as strategists preparing themselves for the unpredictable, uncontrollable nature of life. They would deliberately expose themselves to discomfort. Why? Because they knew that the person who can endure discomfort by choice is far less shaken when discomfort arrives uninvited. They understood that the only difference between voluntary hardship and unexpected suffering is whether you are prepared or not. When discomfort becomes familiar, it loses its power to frighten you. It becomes a training ground rather than a battlefield, We too can train ourselves. When we deny ourselves small comforts, when we step outside of what is easy or pleasurable, we teach the mind a crucial lesson, that calm is not something granted by favorable conditions. It is something cultivated and carried within us, regardless of conditions. By embracing voluntary discomfort, you inoculate yourself against future hardship. You condition your mind to remain unshaken when the inevitable difficulties of life knock at your door. You remind yourself that suffering, at its core, is often a reaction to unfamiliarity. Make discomfort familiar, and you rob it of its sting. Voluntary discomfort does not just toughen the mind, it teaches it. It becomes a silent tutor, stripping away the illusion that we need certain conditions to be happy, to be strong, to be whole. But voluntary discomfort also teaches us far beyond the physical realm. It teaches us in the intellectual and emotional spheres as well. When you sit down to learn something new, when you engage in an activity that you don't understand, when you attempt something you've long avoided out of fear of failure, you are stepping into the same fire. You are choosing discomfort over safety. And in that discomfort, you will be taught. Every beginner is uncomfortable. Every new skill feels foreign. Every new concept feels like a storm of confusion. But when you voluntarily lean into that confusion, when you push through the frustration of not knowing, you become a student of discomfort. You learn not only the skill itself, but the far greater lesson that failure is not a threat, it is a teacher. Every mistake sharpens you. Every failure humbles you. Every stumble builds the muscle of persistence. You learn how to learn. Through this process, you will discover that your fear of failure was far more painful than failure itself. You will find that by throwing yourself into the test of fire, whether in physical hardship or intellectual struggle, you emerge stronger, clearer, and far more confident. You will realize that calm is not found in knowing everything, but in knowing that you can face not knowing and still endure. Each small act of voluntary hardship, whether it's going without a meal or rising before dawn, whispers to your mind, I can endure, I can withstand, I am in control. These whispers accumulate into a belief, and that belief becomes an identity rooted in inner power, not external ease. It is through this process that you move from being at the mercy of circumstance to mastering your response to it. Calm is not given, it is earned, shaped, and practiced until it becomes unbreakable. Chapter 5. The obstacle is the teacher. Life will not cooperate with your plans. People will disappoint you. Systems will fail. Promises will be broken. Expectations will be dashed. And the world will often present you with challenges when you least expect them. These disruptions, though uncomfortable, are inevitable. The Stoics taught that every obstacle is a teacher. Every hardship an opportunity to sharpen the mind and fortify the spirit. They understood that life's trials are not interruptions to the path, but part of the path itself. They are not detours, they are the curriculum. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way." These words were not mere poetry, but a practical guide to navigating life's inevitable struggles. He saw clearly that the things we resist, the barriers we despise, are precisely the things that shape us, teach us, and prepare us for what is to come. He knew that adversity is the grindstone upon which character is honed. The calm mind does not resent obstacles, it welcomes them as the gymnasium of the soul. Each difficulty is a weight to lift, a challenge to rise to, a deliberate invitation to grow stronger. When plans crumble, the Stoic does not see defeat, but instruction. When people fail them, the Stoic does not dwell on betrayal, but examines how they themselves can respond with grace and dignity. Each setback is transformed into an exercise in patience, perseverance, and perspective. Obstacles stretch us beyond what we believed possible. They force us to become resourceful, adaptive, and patient. They strip away our illusions of control and expose the raw material of who we truly are. It is in the crucible of adversity that the Stoic mind is tempered, forged not in ease, but in the fire of resistance. Each challenge becomes a lesson in humility, teaching us that we are not entitled to a smooth path, but responsible for how we walk the rough one. And in walking that rough path, with courage and clarity, we learn how to turn stumbling blocks into stepping stones. Obstacles refine us. They expose the corners of our character that remain untested in comfort. They reveal the hidden fears, the fragile egos, the impulses to retreat when things get hard. They illuminate the places within us where we have not yet grown strong, where our self-perception is fragile and our wisdom untested. But rather than break us, these challenges become the forge in which we choose who we want to be. They become the fires that burn away illusion, entitlement, and weakness, leaving behind something stronger, leaner, and clearer. When we are confronted with the unplanned and the unwanted, we stand at a crossroads, not just of action, but of identity. Do we shrink or do we rise? Do we become reactive or do we become wise? Do we allow the obstacle to diminish us, or do we allow it to become the raw material from which we carve a better version of ourselves? The more you face obstacles without complaint, without resentment, the more you realize that each challenge is a mirror, reflecting your own weaknesses, strengths, and untapped potential. They become not burdens, but essential chapters in the story of your growth. Each obstacle, when embraced rather than resisted, becomes a sculptor's chisel, shaping your character stroke by stroke. The very moments you once cursed become the milestones of your transformation. The frustration becomes fuel, the setback becomes strategy, the pain becomes purpose. And as you begin to see each obstacle not as a wall, but as a window, a new lens through which to understand yourself and your environment, you unlock a kind of clarity that no comfort can teach. You begin to see how every difficulty contains within it a message, a lesson uniquely tailored to your blind spots and weaknesses. Each struggle becomes a spotlight, illuminating something within you that requires your attention, whether it be impatience, pride, fear, or dependency. You realize that the obstacle is not an interruption to your path, but an integral part of your evolution. You develop an ability to step back and see not only what stands in your way, but how that very thing is pushing you towards strength, awareness, and maturity. You begin to recognize that it is in the tension, the frustration, the unexpected friction that you grow most. The obstacle becomes an invitation to pause, to reflect, and to deliberately choose your next step with wisdom rather than impulse. It becomes an exercise in humility and curiosity, encouraging you to ask, "What is this moment here to teach me? How can this difficulty refine me rather than define me?" You learn that what stands in your way is not merely something to endure, but something to absorb, analyze, and integrate. It is not just something you have to tolerate until it passes, but something you can actively engage with, extracting its lessons like a miner extracting gold from the rock. The obstacle, once feared, becomes the teacher that sharpens your mind, strengthens your will, and deepens your calm. It becomes the ground on which you build your steadiness, your integrity, and your strength for the road ahead. It becomes the hidden ally disguised as adversity, guiding you, whether you recognize it or not, toward your greatest potential. And in time, you will look back on these moments, not with resentment, but with gratitude. You will realize that it was the obstacles, the discomfort, the resistance that forged the person you became. That without them, the strength you now possess would have remained dormant, untested, and unseen. You will understand that the obstacle was not only the way, it was the essential catalyst for your transformation. The next time something goes wrong, pause. Before reacting, say aloud, "This is my training." Watch how your perception shifts when you view hardship as a lesson, not a punishment. Chapter 6: The Fortress of Your Attention. Your attention is the gatekeeper of your inner life. The objects of your attention, be they people, ideas, or tasks, inevitably influence your character. Where your attention flows, your energy follows. And where your energy flows, your life takes shape. What you repeatedly allow into your field of awareness becomes the architecture of your inner world. The Stoics guarded their attention ruthlessly. They understood that to allow gossip, outrage, or triviality into the mind was to pollute their inner peace. They likened the mind to a garden and attention to the water that nourishes it. If you water weeds, anger, envy, fear, those are what will flourish. But if you water discipline, clarity, and courage, then your inner garden will grow strong and beautiful. They believed that whatever you allow to grow in your mind will, over time, become the dominant landscape of your soul. Today, we live in an age of infinite distraction. News feeds, arguments, advertisements, all competing to hijack your attention. Each ping on your phone, each headline you read, each scroll through social media is a transaction, a trade of your awareness for stimulation. But most of that stimulation is designed not to uplift or educate, but to provoke and agitate. It saps your energy, fractures your focus, and erodes your calm. We are pulled in a thousand directions every hour, and each pull, though seemingly small, gradually chips away at our ability to maintain inner stillness. These distractions are not neutral. Every click, every scroll, every headline is training your mind to jump, to react, to crave novelty. Every little tug on your attention is a thread that, over time, unravels the fabric of your inner stillness. The Stoics would have seen this constant barrage as mental pollution, a form of chaos that invades your inner sanctuary without consent, a slow erosion of the mental clarity required for calm and composure. And the more you expose yourself to it, the harder it becomes to return to clarity and peace. Like a river diverted by a thousand tiny tributaries, your focus becomes scattered and shallow, unable to carve deeply into what truly matters. This is the hidden cost of distraction, the atrophy of your ability to think deeply, reflect honestly, and act deliberately. Every moment you spend focused on the irrelevant is a moment you are not growing, not thinking, not reflecting. And it is often the seemingly harmless distractions that are the most dangerous, because they accumulate slowly, shaping your habits and attention span over time. The Stoics knew that clarity of thought requires discipline of attention. If you do not direct your mind with intention, the world will direct it for you, and not in your best interest. You will find yourself living reactively, not intentionally. You will discover that your mental energy is spent long before the real challenges of the day arrive, leaving you depleted and scattered when you need focus the most. The modern world, saturated with noise and stimuli, rewards this fractured state. It offers you infinite options to distract yourself from discomfort, to numb yourself from reflection, to entertain yourself into apathy. But this is a trap. The more you indulge in mindless consumption, the harder it becomes to confront the real work of living well, the cultivation of virtue, the mastery of your thoughts, the building of a resilient character. To train your mind to remain calm, you must first take control of what you allow into it. You must stand guard at the gates of your attention like a watchful sentinel. Your attention is not just a passive lens, it is an active force that shapes your reality. It determines whether your mind becomes a fortress of peace or a chaotic marketplace of distractions. Guard it like your most valuable resource, because it is. Let in only what strengthens your virtues, sharpens your thinking, and contributes to your inner stillness. Filter what you consume as carefully as what you eat or drink, because your mental diet will either nourish you or poison you over time. And when you begin to consciously curate what you expose your mind to, you will notice something remarkable. Your calm will no longer be so fragile, your thoughts no longer so scattered. You will discover a newfound spaciousness within your mind, a quietness that allows you to think clearly, act deliberately, and meet life with composure. You will begin to reclaim ownership of your attention, and in doing so, reclaim ownership of your life. This is not a one-time act, but a daily discipline. And with every small act of mindful attention, you will find yourself becoming not only calmer, but freer. Audit your daily information diet. Eliminate one source of negativity or distraction this week. Replace it with something that strengthens your mind: a book, a lecture, a moment of silence. Chapter 7. Amor Fati, Love Your Fate. The highest form of calm is not passive acceptance, but active embrace. The Stoics called it Amor Fati, love of fate. This is not a resignation to misery or a fatalistic shrug, but an act of courage and supreme clarity. It is to welcome each event, each twist and turn of your life, not as an intruder, but as a vital piece of the greater mosaic of your existence. It is one thing to endure hardship. It is another to say, I welcome this, for it is fuel for my growth. The Stoics believed that it is not enough to tolerate what life throws at you. You must lean into it. To love your fate is to stop arguing with reality, to cease the futile resistance against what has already happened, and instead, to embrace it as the very material from which you will shape your virtue. It is a practice of radical acceptance, an audacious act of making peace with the raw, unchangeable facts of existence, and then transforming them into something meaningful. This principle asks you to recognize that life does not happen to you, it happens for you. Every struggle, every betrayal, every disappointment, every unexpected loss becomes a lesson in disguise, a hidden gift that can teach you endurance, humility, patience, and strength. Even when the world feels unjust or senseless, Amor Fati invites you to look deeper and see how these seemingly random events can serve your growth. It is not about pretending that pain is pleasant, but realizing that even pain is purposeful when approached with the right mindset. By loving your fate, you step out of the role of victim and into the role of creator. You use the raw materials of misfortune to craft wisdom. You realize that the most challenging chapters of your life are also the ones that shape your character most profoundly. What once appeared as obstacles reveal themselves to be essential ingredients in the making of a strong, resilient, and wise soul. Amor Fati is not blind optimism. It is clear-eyed courage to look at everything life hands you and say, I will make something good out of this. Friedrich Nietzsche, heavily influenced by the Stoics, said, My formula for greatness in a human being is Amor Fati, that one wants nothing to be different, not forward, not backward, not in all eternity. To practice Amor Fati is to meet every sunrise and every storm with the same spirit, gratitude. Gratitude not because it is easy or pleasant, but because it is necessary, because it is yours. It is to see that what happens to you is not in your control, but how you choose to respond is. It is to meet every challenge with a quiet resolve that whispers, This too belongs to me. I will shape it. I will grow from it. I will let it make me better, not bitter. The serenity you seek is not on the other side of changed circumstances. It is waiting for you in the choice to say, This too belongs to me, and I will make something worthy out of it. And when you make that choice repeatedly, something extraordinary happens. You no longer fear what life may bring, because you know you can transform anything into fuel for your own becoming. Each morning, repeat this mantra. Whatever happens today, I will welcome it as necessary for my growth. Observe how this reframes your daily struggles. Chapter 8. The Stoic Pause. Delay your reaction. One of the simplest yet most powerful techniques the Stoics taught was to delay reaction. It may sound almost too simple to be effective, yet it holds within it the key to breaking the chain of impulse that enslaves so many of us. Because it is in that split second, that moment between what happens to you and how you choose to respond, that you either surrender your mind to chaos or reclaim it with calm authority. In that fleeting instant, you either become a prisoner to your reflexes or a master of your mind. When insulted, pause. When angered, pause. When anxious, pause. When life throws its darts at you, before you lift your shield or hurl one back, pause. That pause is not weakness, it is strength. It is a deliberate act of reclaiming sovereignty over your emotions, a conscious interruption of the reflexive chain reaction that would otherwise lead you to say or do something you will regret. The Stoics knew that the world's provocations cannot harm you unless you let them, but your own unguarded reactions can wound you deeply. Between stimulus and response lies a space. In that space is your freedom, but that space is not automatically given. It must be cultivated, stretched, and fortified through practice. It is a skill that must be earned day by day, moment by moment, in the quiet arena of self-awareness. Every time you choose to pause, you expand that space a little further. You create room for wisdom to step in before habit takes over. You make space for your better judgment, your higher nature, to speak louder than your reflexes. You give yourself the rarest of all gifts in modern life, the gift of choice amidst chaos. Most people react without thinking, prisoners of habit and impulse, caught in the endless chain of cause and effect. The Stoic understands that true power lies not in domination of others, but in mastery over oneself. This practice is like a muscle. At first it feels unnatural, difficult, even frustrating. You will forget to pause. You will catch yourself reacting too quickly. You will fail, and that is part of the training. Each failure is a lesson, an invitation to try again. You may pause too late, or only after you've reacted poorly, but even that recognition is a sign of growth. With repetition, these small moments of reflection begin to etch new pathways into the mind. They reinforce that you are capable of choosing a better response. You begin to see each moment of reactivity not as defeat, but as an opportunity, a reminder to try again and strengthen your resolve. Over time, with intentional effort, you will begin to notice that space opening up. You will see yourself catching anger before it turns to rage, fear before it spirals into panic, insult before it becomes injury. And in that space, you will find clarity, composure, and calm, the very essence of Stoic mastery. That calm will begin to feel less like a distant goal and more like a companion that walks with you into every room, every challenge, every storm. It will become part of your emotional posture, your default stance amid stress. And beyond the calm, you will discover something more profound, that the space you create is not just a pause between stimulus and response. It is the space in which you become who you are. It is the proving ground of your character, the workshop in which you sculpt the person you wish to be. It is the arena where you learn to respond with wisdom instead of instinct, with purpose instead of panic. Every pause, every act of restraint, is a quiet declaration that you refuse to be ruled by anything outside yourself. In those moments of pause, you take responsibility for your own story. You stop being a puppet pulled by the strings of circumstance and become an author who chooses the next line, the next action, the next thought. You become the conductor of your internal orchestra, rather than a single instrument played by emotion and noise. You grow increasingly fluent in the language of self-discipline, and in that fluency, you craft the music of your life with intention. The Stoic pause is more than a strategy. It is a philosophy in motion. It is the physical expression of your inner commitment to live with reason over reaction, courage over compulsion. It reminds you that you are not your impulses. You are not your anger, your anxiety, or your fleeting emotions. You are the one who notices them, the one who can choose to hold them or let them pass. And this realization, the fact that you are not bound to your first thought, your first reaction, creates a kind of spiritual freedom that few ever realize. It is the space where your virtue takes form. Each time you practice this pause, you are engraving into your soul the habit of calm strength. You are creating the foundation of a life not governed by chaos, but by clarity and purpose. You are slowly, patiently, and powerfully becoming the kind of person who can be trusted with hardship, with responsibility, with peace. Not because the world has changed, but because you have. And that transformation, born in the quiet courage of the pause, is perhaps the most radical form of strength there is. For 1 week, practice the Stoic pause. Whenever you feel triggered, count slowly to five before responding. Observe how the urge to react often fades within that pause. Chapter 9. Memento Mori, the calm of mortality. The Stoics meditated daily on death, not to be morbid, but to clarify what truly matters. For them, the contemplation of mortality was not a grim exercise, but a spiritual and philosophical one, an anchor that brought them back to the essentials of life. It stripped away illusions and focused the mind like a blade on what is actually within our control. They believed that to forget death is to drift aimlessly, to lose perspective on what is urgent versus what is simply loud. When you know you are dying, because we all are, then you start paying attention to how you are living. Death is the greatest equalizer, and for the Stoics, it was the greatest motivator. Not a shadow to fear, but a light to live by, a reminder that every moment is a non-renewable resource. Seneca wrote, "You act like mortals in all that you fear, and like immortals in all that you desire." He pointed to the absurd contradiction we live by, fearing small discomforts as if they are fatal, and yet wasting time as though we have infinite tomorrows. The Stoics wanted to turn this delusion on its head. By remembering the certainty of death, they sought to live more vividly, more intentionally, more awake. They saw death not as an end to be feared, but as a teacher, one that, if remembered daily, could strip away distractions, vanity, and procrastination. For them, every day could be their last, and that made every day precious. Death was the clearest lens through which to view life. To remember that you and everyone you know will die is to eliminate trivial concerns. The pettiness of arguments, the noise of social approval, the endless hunger for more, these fade into insignificance when placed beside the truth that time is finite. When you meditate on death, you see how precious each moment is. You recognize how miraculous it is to breathe, to love, to choose. You become less reactive, less anxious about things that do not truly matter. You gain the power to prioritize with wisdom, to say no to distractions, and yes to what nurtures your soul. Death teaches you to live on purpose, to stop wasting time on things that dull your spirit, and to move toward what makes you truly alive. It calls you to act, to express, to forgive, to engage. It sharpens the edges of your awareness and fuels your courage to live fully and honestly. Memento Mori is not about becoming detached or indifferent. It's about becoming deeply alive. It is a call to presence, to clarity, and to courage. It reminds you that your time is limited and therefore infinitely valuable. It urges you to forgive more quickly, to speak more truthfully, to love more deeply, and to risk more boldly. It is about living a life so rich in intention, so full of integrity, that if death came tomorrow, you could meet it not with regret, but with readiness. It transforms the fear of loss into a commitment to presence. To live in the shadow of death is to walk with light in your heart. And that light is the essence of calm, the radiance of a mind that no longer fears the inevitable, but uses it as fuel to live fully now. In embracing death, the Stoics teach us how to embrace life completely, courageously, and with open eyes. Every night before sleep, remind yourself, I may not wake tomorrow. Let me leave today in peace. Chapter 10. The Practice of Virtue, Calm as a Byproduct. The Stoics did not pursue calm for its own sake. They pursued virtue. Calm was merely the byproduct of living rightly. To them, a tranquil mind was not an end goal, but a natural outcome of consistently aligning one's actions with reason, discipline, and moral clarity. Peace, in their view, was not found by escaping conflict or avoiding discomfort. It was discovered in the steadfast pursuit of excellence in character. It was earned through effort, through hard decisions, through a life shaped around principle, not convenience. Calm was not a luxury they indulged in, but a natural consequence of doing what was right, even when it was hard. To practice justice, courage, temperance, and wisdom is to build a mind untroubled by chaos. Justice gives you purpose beyond yourself. Courage anchors you when fear rises. Temperance keeps your desires in check, and wisdom guides you through uncertainty. These virtues form the bedrock of a resilient soul. When you wake each day and strive to live with integrity, when you speak the truth even when it is hard, when you restrain your impulses and act with thoughtfulness, you are practicing the art of stability from within. Every virtuous action, no matter how small, is like a stone laid into the foundation of your inner fortress. You become harder to shake, more difficult to offend, more capable of acting with clarity in the midst of chaos. Calm arises not because the world has grown quiet, but because you have chosen to cultivate stillness in the middle of its noise. By focusing your energy on virtue, you protect yourself from being tossed around by external circumstances. You stop asking the world to change and start transforming how you meet it. You begin to take full responsibility for the way you experience life. The world remains chaotic, but you become unmoved. You walk through storms without letting the storm inside you. You become, as Marcus Aurelius said, like the promontory against which the waves continually break, and yet it stands firm. Living virtuously trains your mind to let go of what is petty and hold firm to what is true. You become more selective with your thoughts, more intentional with your words, more deliberate in your actions. And in doing so, you construct an inner temple, one built not of brick and stone, but of values strong enough to withstand the tempests of fortune. That is the Stoic promise. Not a life without difficulty, but a life where difficulty refines you instead of destroying you. Where hardship is not a curse, but a proving ground. Where every challenge becomes an invitation to practice the very virtue you claim to hold. And from that daily fire of virtuous effort, calm is born. Quiet, unshakable, and entirely your own. It is the kind of calm that doesn't require silence or safety to exist. It walks with you through conflict, through loss, through uncertainty, and remains. It is not inherited, and it cannot be borrowed. It must be built, habit by habit, choice by choice, until it becomes your natural way of meeting the world. Each morning, choose one virtue to embody that day. Write it down. Let it be your compass, the principle you consciously return to in every decision, every conversation, and every challenge you face. Reflect on why you've chosen it, whether it's patience, courage, humility, or discipline, and set a clear intention to live by it throughout the day. Remind yourself that the virtue you carry will influence not only how you act, but how you interpret and respond to everything that happens around you. Throughout the day, whenever you feel your mind being pulled by distractions, frustrations, or emotional impulses, pause and recall the virtue you have chosen. Use it as an anchor to bring you back to yourself. In moments of stress or temptation, ask, "What would patience choose here? What would courage demand of me now?" Let it become your internal standard, your filter for every thought and action. At the end of the day, take a few minutes to review how well you upheld that virtue. Acknowledge where you succeeded and where you fell short, not to judge yourself, but to learn. Over time, this simple intentional practice will accumulate like drops of water filling a jar. And before you realize it, you will have shaped yourself into someone who does not simply know the virtues, but lives them.